Dadhood. Modern Dadhood Podcast.
Hey there, friends. Welcome. This is Modern Dadhood, an ongoing conversation about the joys, challenges, and general insanity of being a dad in this moment. My name is Mark Checkett, and I'm a dad. I've got two children, both boys, 6 years old. They're twins. If this is your first time listening to the show, well, welcome. Thank you for checking us out. I hope you stay a while. If you are a regular listener of the show, well then, gosh darn it, thank you. We appreciate you. You know, this little podcast of ours has been quite the adventure so far. We've met some super cool people who have shared some stories and thoughts and experiences that sometimes are funny, sometimes are sad, and occasionally quite inspiring. You can check all of our sodes. We call them sodes. You can call them sodes too if you want. You can check out all of our sodes wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the billion or so other platforms that are out there. You can also check out every single one of our episodes at moderndadhood.com if you'd like. You go to moderndadhood.com, you use the little menu thingy, and you can find an episodes page, and they're all there. Just there. They're just all there, and it's very convenient. And wherever you listen, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a review, I mean, that would be so sick. You could also, well, gosh, you could tell a friend about the show, which would be amazing. Word of mouth really, really helps our little show. Today, we have a special rewind episode. That was a weird emphasis. We have a special rewind episode. Rewind. Well, however you prefer to say it. We've got a rewind episode today. And sometimes what we do is we reach back into the back catalogs, into the archives, and we dust off a particularly tasty ear snack that we really want people to hear again. And we put it out. And that's what a rewind episode is. In this week, the episode is one in which we interview the wonderful Craig Melvin, who you may know as a news anchor on Dateline NBC. He is on the Today Show, and he does a wonderful digital series on that show called Dad's Got This, which I highly recommend you check out if you have not seen any of the Dad's Got This series. We had a great time chatting with Craig. He spent a lot of time with us, which was super cool of him. We got into some pretty heavy stuff, like here and there and throughout the episode. So that's pretty fun. That's pretty cool. And a lot of our conversation centers around a book that he had kind of recently released around that time, which is called Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father, which I read, found fascinating. It was very insightful. Highly recommend you check it out. It's on Audible if listening to books is your thing. All right, that's enough yapping. Let's get snapping. I'm trying out a new phrase. Let me know what you think. Here is our conversation from back in July of 2021 with the delightful Craig Melvin. We are really excited to welcome Craig Melvin to the conversation. Craig is a massively popular news anchor and television personality appearing on Dateline NBC. I don't know if you've heard of that. Maybe the Today Show. I don't know if you've heard of that one. Craig's also a dad to a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And he recently released a book called Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father, which is available worldwide. And aside from sitting down and writing a book about fatherhood, he's also explored the subject a whole bunch in his digital series for the Today Show called Dad's Got This, which is really fantastic. So Craig, welcome to Modern Dadhood. We're really happy to have you on the show.
Oh, Adam, Mark, thanks for having me. And thank you so much for spotlighting Modern Dadhood. Kudos to you guys.
Our pleasure.
Yeah.
So we want to chat a bit about your book. So Pops covers a lot of ground in exploring both your sort of evolving relationship with your dad and your own role as a father of two. And an overarching theme in the book is obviously addiction. So I'm wondering if you can maybe share briefly, or as briefly as you can, sort of summarize a book into, you know, a minute or two, who your father was to you growing up, and I guess, the events that ultimately led to you deciding to examine that relationship for the book?
That's a good question. It's a big question. My dad growing up, I think, was probably like a lot of dads of his generation. He'll be 70 this year. But he was, remote, distant. He did not emote a great deal. And he struggled mightily with alcohol addiction. And, it was one of those things that, he spent almost 40 years as a mail clerk at the post office working the third shift. So, you work that shift during the day, you're sleeping because at night you're working. So our schedules in general were always off. And he was a recreational beer guy. I remember growing up always seeing him with the Budweiser in his hand or a cup of Budweiser in his hand. And then as I got older, he started drinking more. And then when he retired about 5 years ago now, he had nothing else to do. He had not developed hobbies and interests, primarily because of the shift he worked. And so the drinking that had already gotten pretty bad, it just spiraled out of control. And in 2018, he got in a fender bender that was caused by him being blackout drunk. And so at that point, my brother and I and a few of us in the family, our concern was that he was going to hurt or kill either himself or someone else. Because he had started to do more of this blackout drunk driving. And so we staged an intervention with the professional, Adam. And at the age of 67, my father, who had been a functional and then barely functional alcoholic for the better part of 45 years, gave it up. Wow. After about 8 weeks in an inpatient treatment facility. So the book is about, it's about his journey. It's about our journey, but it's also a celebration, as you know, it's about the celebration of fatherhood in general, something that doesn't get celebrated as often as it should, in my opinion.
Well, we agree with you.
Yep. We agree enough that we started a podcast about it. Yeah. So I'm sure that there was a lot of planning, preparation, maybe even a little meditation leading up to the interview portion of this and eventually the writing for Pops. And I wonder if you had any fear going in to the process at all.
Sure. Absolutely. I've throughout the course of my career, I've interviewed presidents and actors and musicians and, regular folks who've done extraordinary things, but I'd never interviewed a parent. And certainly about the subject matter that's covered in the book. So yes, I was nervous and fearful about the interview itself. And that's the interview. It was actually several interviews, which is one of the highlights. I've got 4.5 hours of my father just talking about his life and answering all of my questions. And so my kids and my kids' kids and their kids, if they so choose one day, they'll be able to hear their grandfather's voice. I didn't have that luxury. I never heard the voice of my grandparents and my grandfather, I should say, either side. But no, yeah, I was nervous, but I was more nervous about the finished copy of the book and having him read that. Mm. And it was very important to me that before the editor signed off on it, before my wife, before she took a look at it, I wanted him to read the first draft. And I sent it down to him. I mailed him a copy. And, it took him about a week or so. And he called me up. I said, "Oh, I finished your book." I said, "Well, what'd you think?" He said, "Well, it's all there." I said, "Well, is it accurate?" He said, "Oh, no, it's accurate. It's," I said, "Man, I'm impressed you're able to remember so much." And that was it. And at that point, Mark, obviously I wanted people to read the story and I want people to use the book as an opportunity to examine some of the relationships that they have with their parents and their children. But at the end of the day, I wrote the book for my dad. And I wrote it for my kids, and I selfishly wrote it for my, I wrote it for me.
Sure.
And, but I do think that there's something in there for everyone else too.
Well, Craig, in the book, you describe various other father figures in your life who really shaped who you would become as a father when your own father couldn't fulfill that role. I wonder, can you point to things that you do now or ways that you act as a dad that you can link back to these men?
That's a good question. And I should note that, you know, my father's work ethic, and I write about it in the book. I got that from him. You know, my dad, you know, at an early age, I mean, he would weekends, holidays. I mean, the man, even when he was in the throes of his addiction, was still working overtime and double time to help put food on the table. And then you find out years later he was doing it while he was drunk or hungover, and it made it even more impressive. But along the way, you know, my Uncle James, I write about a fair amount in the book, my father's older brother. I think from him, I developed a genuine interest in politics and government. He worked at the Department of Labor in Washington. And from an early age, I remember being in, I didn't know exactly what it was that he did, but I knew he worked for the government. And you know, when you're seven, your perspective is obviously a little different. Mm-hmm. And he always drove a Cadillac. And so I came to associate Cadillacs with success, and my uncle with success. And so we would always talk about, you know, politics, whatever was happening in government at the time. So I think he helped plant those seeds. And then years later, I landed an internship in Washington, and I actually spent a month with him, which is one of the highlights of my life. So I got that from Uncle James. I think my friend about Uncle Pop is what we call him. His real name is Frank. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know why we call him Pop. There's never really been a full explanation of how that came to be his nickname. But my Uncle Frank helped me develop a genuine interest in sports. He played high school basketball, and I remember going to see him play when I was, you know, five or six. And, you know, I just, even from teachers and coaches along the way, I think I picked up genuine curiosity from a few teachers that I was fortunate enough to have in high school. My AP government and world history teacher, for instance, really sort of helped open my eyes to the world. I think one of the things I discovered while writing the book is that my dad's relationship with his father was virtually non-existent. He didn't even know who his dad was until he was almost a teenager. And so growing up, I was angry and resentful of my dad because I wanted him to be something that he wasn't capable of being. Forget the addiction. I mean, I wanted him to be something that he had not seen. And I think we do that from time to time in our society. We expect people to be certain things when they haven't been presented with examples of those things. And here I was expecting my dad to be Dr. Heathcliff Huxtable. And he barely knew his own father.
Right. A few minutes ago, you brought up an intervention that you had with your father a few years back. And in the book, you used the word village to describe the people that came around at that time and rallied around him. And I just, in listening to the book, just that word stuck out at me. I thought it was such a great choice of words to use, village. And I just wonder, do you feel like parenting now has lost a little bit of that, you know, quote, it takes a village sentiment?
No question. We've lost a lot of that sentiment. I think that's for a variety of reasons. I mean, I don't think that, social media has helped us with that. I mean, I think that, you know, I think that we far too often now, we silo ourselves into these little things, these tribes, and you live near like-minded people. If you go to church, you're going to church with like-minded people. Oftentimes, your social circles are filled with like-minded people. I think it's probably always been like that to a certain extent, but I think social media has exacerbated it. So I think we've all become very suspicious of each other. Hmm. And I think that because of that, you know, it's how dare you say that to my child? Hmm. Or who do you think you are, disciplining my son or my daughter? Or so it's, you know, when I was growing up, I grew up in South Carolina. And culturally, I think it's also a little different. You know, you grow up a black kid in South Carolina, you've got like at birth, you've got like 30 cousins, like five of whom are really your cousin. The other 25, you just refer to them as your cousin. And then you get older, you're like, wait a minute, this isn't my real cousin. What are they? And so you're born into this village. And I attribute a great deal of my success, if you will, in life to the village that I had. I grew up in a neighborhood, and I write about it in the book. You know, neighbors on the left were white. Next door to them is another black family on the corner. I can see it as I'm describing it. On the corner were the Chungs, a Chinese family. They owned the Chinese restaurant that was up the street. And across the street from them, there's a Lebanese family, the Najims. Next door to them, we had the Viscontis, an Italian family. And then another black family, and then another white family. I mean, it was just this hodgepodge of cultures. But we were also, they all had kids around the same age. So we would be in and out of each other's houses. And that's how we grew up. And now, you know, with my kids, it's all, you've got to schedule a play date and, you know, you've got to pick up and drop off. And when I was growing up, there's no scheduling of play dates because you couldn't text. And there's no, your kids just showed up at your door. You just always asked me, come on in, sure. Are you sitting down for dinner? Oh, yeah, I'll invite myself in for meal. Yeah, sure. You know, so it was, I don't know. And I know I sound like my father now. I sound like I'm almost 70. But there was something magical about that. And we've gotten away from it. And I don't think we ever returned to it. That's the sad part.
So I wanted to ask, in the light of all of the work you've done on your relationship with your dad, and as a result of him committing to his recovery, will your children have a very different connection to him than you did for most of your life?
They already do. You know, my son's 7 and my daughter's 4. They don't know. They don't know the man that I write about in the book. It's my younger brother and I, we joke about it now. It's actually become quite comical to see him, to see our dad interact with our children. He has 6 grandchildren now. And he'll do this thing where he'll FaceTime at, you know, like 2 p.m. He's like, oh, I just called to see what the kids are up to. And it's like, well, the kids are in school, Dad. Like he's like, oh, yeah, well, when they come home, just, you know, FaceTime, I just want to check in. And, you know, I'll put the phone up, kids, hey, pop. And he's asking about their day and they're talking sports and they're showing him stuff. And, you know, he was up here a few weeks ago, first time since the pandemic. They were up for about a week, my mom and my dad, and we went to my son's soccer game on the Saturday morning. My son, full disclosure, not much of a soccer player. He more enjoys the fellowship of the sport. Sure. Yeah. But here we are, 30 seconds into the game, and Dell, he scored 1 goal the entire season. This was the second to last game of the season. And 30 seconds in, dribble, shoot, score. And I, you know, my dad's, you know, he's cheering and hooting and hollering, and I'm screaming like the kid just won the green jacket at Augusta. And then shortly thereafter, I remember thinking in the moment, I never got this, you know, and it's not that, you know, I mean, I'm not bitter about it anymore. I was for a long time, but my kids are getting it. And I think that's the beauty of my dad's story. It's a story of redemption. It's never too late. It's never too late. And my dad's walking, living, breathing proof.
I would love to ask this question, because this too, a lot of the books, you know, really struck me. And I feel like though your life is so different than mine, your upbringing, you know, you're from a different part of the country than me, and a lot is different, but there was still so much that I could relate to. what I'm about to read, this quote that I'm about to read from the book is something that really kind of struck me too, because I've had a similar realization, but you say it so succinctly and so clearly in the book. Early on, you say, quote, "When you have children, you become more aware of the sacrifices fathers make to provide for their families. I began to see the toll living took on my dad," end quote. And I just wonder, what was it like for you to have that realization?
You know, it was funny you should zero in on that, because that was one of my biggest takeaways after spending 4.5 hours talking to my dad. It's, I don't quote Oprah a lot, Mark, but she said something a number of years ago that's always stayed with me. And I think she actually may have ripped it off from Dr. Maya Angelou, but that's neither here nor there. She said, when we know better, we do better. Mm. And when I was a kid, and even when I was a teenager, 20s, I didn't understand addiction. I didn't understand that it was a disease, an illness that doesn't just affect the person suffering with it, but also those around him or her indirectly. But if you really think about it, the way that society views addiction now, it's dramatically different than it was, I would contend, just five or 10 years ago. And you rewind 25 years ago, it's, oh, my dad, he's a drunk. He's weak. If he really wanted to, he could get that monkey off his back. And he couldn't. And he couldn't. And it didn't help that those around him were handling it the way that we were handling it, essentially writing him off and putting him in a corner by himself and just carrying on with our lives by and large. And so when I became a dad, I started to look at the world differently. I started to look at my own father differently. And I came to appreciate, even before I started writing the book, but certainly by the time I was finished with the book, I came to appreciate the sacrifices that he had made. My dad worked a third shift at a job he did not like and was very open about his disdain. There's a part in the book where he's joking about going postal, and he remembers, and that was like a phrase. And he was like, you know, if people ever worked at the post office, they'd understand how something like that could be possible. And so here was a man who, he didn't go to college. He grew up not knowing who his father was. And he busts his hump so that his three boys could go to college. We all enjoy lives beyond our wildest imaginations. We have beautiful families. And it was part of the reason I also wrote it was my dad, after rehab, started to do this thing where we would have conversations, and he would start to cry. He would become very regretful. He would talk about how much time he had wasted. And I wanted my dad, while he was able to appreciate it, I wanted him to understand that we've all gotten to a point where we forgive him and we understand what he was dealing with. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. My last question for you, Craig, would be, you know, I feel like in some ways with books like yours, with podcasts like this one, in some ways we're kind of, you know, bucking a trend by speaking openly about and celebrating fatherhood. I wonder, when you saw the name Modern Dadhood come across your desk, what does that phrase mean to you or evoke in you?
It's funny because I when I heard about you guys, I was like, wow, what a great concept. I think it's funny because, again, not to keep using the phrase, but I write about this in the book. Fatherhood has changed so dramatically, I think, and pretty quickly. The expectations of fathers. Like, you know, when I was, I can't speak for you guys, but, you know, when I was a kid, my dad, partly because of the addiction and partly because of his work schedule, he was rarely at things. Like if he was there, it was a graduation or a wedding or a funeral, or it was something big. And my kids, the expectation is that dad's always there. Mm-hmm. And if dad isn't there, there needs to be a conversation before said event so dad can explain that he can't be there because dad has to work so that he can help pay for the event that the child is enjoying. And so I think I think the expectations of fatherhood have changed so rapidly in a good way, I would contend. But modern dads, we're doing it all, you know, we're doing it all. And it's not just the physical presence. It's the emotional presence. I read a book before we had our first child, and I haven't read any books since, because you realize you start reading those books, and I'm not even sure those books are written by people who have children. But anyway, I forget the author, but he or she wrote that one of the best things you can do with your child is to just talk to them about important stuff, small stuff, silly stuff. Just engage in the art of conversation at an early age. Just the give and take, not so they, you know, learn how to read faster or talk faster, but to develop the relationship. Because apparently the time comes where your children don't want to speak to you as much. But if you have laid that foundation and you've planted those seeds, it becomes a lot easier later in life when children become a bit more complicated than my 7 and 4 year old.
That's good advice. I just wanted to say, Craig, that I think the book is really fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And I think it's a great story. And I think that you tell it so well. And I know that I was listening to it. And I know that as I was listening to it, so many memories from my own childhood were coming back. You know, my dad didn't have a Le Mans, but he had an old tractor that he was constantly tinkering with that I don't think he knew what he was doing at all. But I was usually right there by his side with the job of having to hand over some kind of tool.
And when you realize that one of the reasons my dad did it was just get out of the house.
Yeah.
That was his primary motivation. Like even now, I'll talk to him sometimes on the phone. And I'll talk to my mom, and I'm like, "Where's Dad? Oh, I don't know. He's out in the yard." And I'll talk to him. I'll talk to him a few hours later. I said, "I'm like, Pops, I talked to Mom earlier. She said you were out in the yard. What were you doing? Nothing. Just outside.
Just out in the yard. That's great. That's great.
Mark, thank you. Adam, thank you. I've enjoyed this."
Dads and moms listening, you can buy Craig Melvin's book, Pops, Learning to Be a Son and a Father, at your local bookstore. You can hear Craig himself narrate the book on Audible. And like Mark said, if you like modern dadhood, you're really going to enjoy Pops, and we just can't recommend it enough. Craig, I want to thank you so much for sharing a bit of your time with us to celebrate fatherhood. We want to wish all the best to you, Lindsay, and your kids. Thanks again.
Thank you, Craig. Really appreciate it.
Thank you both. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed our time together. Be well. Take care, guys.
Adam, could you step into the chamber?
It sounds like what you are telling me is that it's time for confessions.
Confessions. Sometimes my kids will rattle off a whole string of words, and without having even the slightest idea of what they said, I'll reply, "Oh, really? Cool."
Confessions.
Confessions.
I'm at a stage in my life where show tunes are stuck in my head all day long, and I'm mostly okay with that.
Confessions.
Confessions.
Confessions. I once ate an entire sleeve of Tate's chocolate chip cookies in the car while my kids were in the back seat, and I didn't offer a single bite. In fact, I never said a single word.
Confessions.
Confessions.
Tate's gluten-free chocolate chip cookies are far superior to the original Tate's chocolate chip.
False.
They actually are better.
Periodically, if I find crumbs on the floor, I'll just kick them under the couch, even if it takes 2 or 3 kicks to get them there.
Confessions.
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 Earlier today, my daughter opened her car door a little too much and it left a small scratch on the car next to us. You're probably thinking I'm going to say that we didn't leave a note. We left a note.
There was a spider in the house. I hate spiders. The boys saw me lunge toward it with a fistful of paper towel and fire in my eyes. They said, "Daddy, what are you doing?" I said, capturing it to set it free. Oh, I set it free, all right. Free to death.
Oh, that was a really good one. That was a really good one.
Confession. Here we is.
Dads and moms listening, you can find us at moderndadhood.com, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, all the other ones, wherever you like to listen. And wherever you do listen, please subscribe and leave a rating and a review.
Throw us in your Sony Discman. Oh, also, hey, tell a friend, would you? Word of mouth, you have no idea. It's like so super duper important to us.
We would love for you to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Maybe YouTube, but I don't.
Rude. And we'd be tickled if you went to moderndadhood.com and bought yourself a t-shirt.
Or a Modern Dad hoodie. Sometimes I take the Modern Dad hoodie and just ball it up and use it as a pillow. Take little quick cat naps on the floor when my kids play.
That is a vision.
Yeah, I got to take the opportunities when they come along, you know, for those naps. Hey, while you're there at the website, you can drop us a line at hey@moderndadhood.com if you like. Why don't you give here? I challenge a listener out there. Shoot us some ideas for a topic. You know, there's stuff we haven't covered yet.
Thank you, as always, to our friends Casper Baby Pants and Spencer Albee for the music in Modern Dadhood, to Pete Morse at Red Vault Audio for making us sound as good as we possibly can, considering we are still largely recording in different spots. And thank you very much to Craig Melvin and his team for making this fantastic conversation happen.
And thank you for listening.